It's just so wonderful to be back at Westcott this morning. Hopefully I've got over my emotional bit so I won't break down in the middle, but I'm sure you'll understand if I do. It's just so fantastic to see so many familiar faces. We've missed you all very much. I bring greetings from Mum and Dad that are up there looking at us. Dad was going to plan to come, but just decided at the last minute that he wasn't going to risk it. So he's joining us from Zoom, but would love to have been here. I also bring greetings from all our friends in West Papua. I spoke to them last week, telling them that I was going to be speaking to you all today, and asked them what they would like to say to you and what they would like to share with you about what's happening to them and what's happening in their land. So they asked me to share about the challenges that they're facing, but they also felt that it was really important to share some stories of hope, because that's what we need right now. There's so much going on in the world, there's so much going on in their lives, in our lives, and they really wanted for me to share with you the good things that are happening as well as the challenges. How they're working together and how important our as Papua partners and your solidarity and support is to their ongoing journey to achieve peace and justice in Papua. For those who don't know me, although I think maybe most of you do, but for those who don't and are on Zoom, I'm Naomi, married to Javier, mum to Alana, Aaron and Irian. We moved to West Papua in 2006 till 2019, and Westcott has always been a big part of our journey and life as a family. And we were married right here in this church, and this is where we came home to rest every few years. This was our community who have constantly supported our vision, came to our help during disasters, literal disasters, floods, wars, wrote letters to members of parliament when our colleagues were in trouble, and have been a huge part of the change and impact that has taken part in many of the lives, some of which I'm going to share with you today. And just to recap as well, for those who don't know much about West Papua, who have forgotten, West Papua has been described as a place at the ends of the earth, with 250 languages and tribes, high mountains and massive, still intact tracts of forests. People live in small villages, steep mountains and deep jungles, and growing urban centres, where they also live alongside growing numbers of migrants from other areas of Indonesia, and where indigenous Papuan people experience confrontation with the modern world. Many tribes were only discovered in the 1960s. So they've gone through massive change over the last 50 years. It's also a contested land, which, as my friends describe, one of my friends, Rode, describes the impact of being the image of God being trampled on in the faces and the lives of the bodies of indigenous people. Indonesia annexed the land in 1969 with help from the US and others, and the presence of Indonesia is still contested and considered illegal by most Papuans. So what's the situation now? Some of the challenges that they're facing, and I shared a bit about this last year when I spoke to you on Zoom, but even since then the situation has escalated, become more blatant as the eyes of the world turn elsewhere and have been occupied by the pandemic and conflicts in other countries. And the government has been increasingly obvious in its desire to control land and resources that it's currently doing anything to make sure that this happens and they get what they want. So every week there are more military sent to control different areas, and there's open conflict now happening that we're hearing about every day. It used to be when we lived there, every few months or maybe once a year, there would be an incident. Now it's nearly every day we're hearing of incidences. This has now resulted in nearly 100,000 Indigenous Papuan refugees, which was unknown 5 years ago. There were some displaced because of disasters, but not from conflict. Many are now living in the forest, staying with families, and others are in refugee camps. And they've been given zero access to humanitarian aid up until just last week. The Red Cross wasn't even allowed to get in. And churches have found it hard to visit. And when one of our partners tried to go and visit, they were intimidated and followed. But those are the challenges. But within this, our partners are acting with courage and bringing peace and joy with their work and with their passion and vision. The main basis and motivation for what we and all our partners work for is based on John 10:10, where Jesus says, "I have come so they might have life and have it to the full." And we together want to work towards this biblical concept of shalom, where all those relationships are good. The relationships with Papuans and the land, Papuans and God, Papuans and the Indonesians, and with each other and between men and women. We want to see men, women and children in West Papua have the freedom to thrive and live their lives full of love, peace and justice rather than violence and loss. So we walk how we work, as we've always worked. We walk alongside and support individuals, organizations, community groups, activists, churches, so that they are equipped, confident, believe in what God has innately planted in them, believe that they can use that to change their communities and change the world. Now that we've moved to Northern Ireland since 2019, we continue to work in this way, but it looks a little bit different. Now our partners and the leaders that we've worked with over 14, 15 years are leading the way, and we take a back seat and help, we could almost say it kind of virtually, holding hands as they lead and focus on building movements and training others. And we're, as Papua Partners, we continue to support financially with training and mentoring, increasing international, trying to bring the voices of Papua to the international world and the United Nations and other governments, and also continually day by day walk with them in their journey and be there for them, as well as supporting financially, salaries and projects. That's kind of all the technical side of it. But just to move it on to the amazing people that we work with, who are now working in, I could almost like say a team. There's six, seven organizations and leaders and activists working together, leading on various initiatives, but always coordinating, building each other up and supporting each other. I can't see the slide. So yes, people, those of you who've walked our journey with us may remember Yapina, who is a survivor of forced marriage, forced out of her community, victim of violence, who then joined Yasumat, one of our partners, and was a community health worker, and then ended up leading the health team, ended up leading Yasumat. Then she went out on her own to train others a couple of years ago. And now she is in charge of all our work in Papua. She is now my colleague and my staff member, and we talk most weeks, and she is leading our work, mainly focusing on our church, what we call church and community transformation work. So helping the church look outside its four walls at what's going on in their communities and bring transformation. And it's been a fantastic support to me as well, being away. So we, to have that, so the two of us work together. And that's one thing the pandemic has, one positive aspect is this, everybody getting used to being online, even people in very remote communities now, we can have Zoom conversations and meetings, so that's fantastic. So she is now managing our network, which now is working with, I think, nearly 120 church congregations across various parts of Papua, impacting the lives of about 10,000 people, which is amazing. And it's actually growing now so much, it's gradually going out of our hands and it's moving into different church denominations and other organizations. Yapina is also working on an issue that she's passionate about, which is ending violence against women and girls, which is unfortunately very pervasive across many communities where women are seen as second-class citizens. But very encouragingly, I was actually hoping that I could have a video message of her, but she was in a remote area and we couldn't get the right connection. But she sent me a message yesterday just to say that they'd been in workshops with church leaders and tribal leaders and women over the last week in a town called Dekai in the middle of the jungle. And she shared me photos of her facilitating and sitting on the ground with women and men all sitting together, which is quite a shift. Normally men and women are separated. And she just shared stories of men, some of the church leaders standing up and just saying, you know, we didn't ever really grasp the meaning of these verses. You know, where God created man and women, and that God also has a vision for women to have a place in this world and to influence and to lead, and that they committed to giving women a space in their church. So that's, and in their communities, which is really exciting. Yes, so next we go to a local group. This is Erawok, is a group in the town of Bokondini where we lived, and you'll have heard us tell stories about them before. Javier worked with them to set up a community bank. Erawok are actually an example of the outcome of this church and community transformation. They went through this process of looking at the role of church and communities, at the role of church and societies, and after that they set up this community group called Erawok. The savings bank that we've told you about before is still open, and people are coming to it twice a week. It's run by women. It was run by men, but the women have kind of taken over. And when actually it was left by some of the men who got government positions, and then the women have come in and taken it over and gotten it back up and running again. When we lived there, we used to meet with a group of women once a week to learn about basic health, community health, about the HIV, and we did a lot of awareness raising. Now that group of women, some of them who could not read back then, so we used to read the lessons out loud and translate them, they set up their own literacy groups and have learnt to read over the last 3 or 4 years, and have now set up a formal community health network. And 2 weeks ago, they opened their clinic, first clinic, accompanied by a professional nurse, and they are now receiving people who would never go to a government clinic because the nurses and doctors couldn't understand them. So these ladies speak their own language, can understand the issues they're facing, can talk about private personal issues, and can reduce stigma and fake news and fake information that they're receiving about all sorts of issues. So it's, we're really excited about that. And they've also recently, again, going back, probably a story that you remember, when Javier was there and started teaching all the women how to bake bread. Also, only just this month, the Erawok, they formed their own business with 10 women from 10 different communities, a bread and cake making business. And together with Papua Partners and a foundation from the Netherlands, we've been able to fund 10 ovens and 10 stoves for them to start formally selling and baking bread in their community, which will then impact their families and their communities, and gives a fantastic role model for other girls and women looking at those as an example of how women can really impact and support their families. And so moving from Bokondini to another one of our champions and team members, this is Eneko. Eneko actually is a former professional footballer. He used to play for the national Papuan football team. And we knew him actually when he was a teenager on the football team. His father was a big tribal chief, and he was kind of a young man, and got into quite a lot of trouble with drugs and alcohol after he left the football team. And frustration with political situations and loss of friends, he was edging towards turning and joining armed conflict, the armed rebels. In 2017, he came to one of our youth dialogues for peace and justice when we were still there, and made a commitment to nonviolent resistance. So he's now become he works for one of our partners, but with us as well, our peace and justice coordinator and youth coordinator. And he has been doing amazing work in mobilizing youth, bringing people together. We call him he never sits down. The man in Indonesian, they say, you know, the man who's constantly running. So he runs from group to group, trying to bring people together where there's been divisions, where people haven't talked to each other, where there's been fights. And he's managed to negotiate over the last year as well with one of the armed groups to gradually think, not quite yet, but we're in the process of convincing them to make a statement about putting down their arms and committing to nonviolence. So he is also one of the founders of the Papuan Christian Youth Network, which are now bringing together, so not just one denomination, but so they're working with various Protestant denominations as well as the Catholic Church, and now having this year planning mass events, which they're calling youth dialogues, which they're bringing together in ecumenical services across Papua to reflect and pray on the role of the youth for the future of Papua. And just to emphasize as well how the local now has linked to the national, international, also, which has been really facilitated by us being back here and having links into international church movements. The youth group there has now really linked into the Pacific Forum of Youth and the World Council of Churches Youth Forum. And so they're interacting with all of that and are able to tell their stories, learn from their colleagues across the world. And we're hoping there'll be opportunities for them to travel and learn internationally from other young people. And then I think it's the last example I have. Oh no, second last. is Yasumat, it's back to where we all started. This is the group that we went out to live with and embed ourselves with, and who to this day, if they haven't heard from me for a week, there will be messages saying, where are you? What are you doing? Are you all okay? We're praying for you. Every Monday in their meetings, they pray for our family. They pray for all of you. Every Monday, Westcott is mentioned in name. And they very regularly ask for names of people to pray for as well. So it can be that we think, you know, we're supporting them, but they're also thinking of us and walking with us in our journeys and challenges as well. So Yasumat are continuing to do the incredible work that they do. They're growing in strength and in impact, and they're continuing to provide rural education to over 7,000 children now. This year, they're starting a new model school. All their schools up to now have been very rural, locally run in communities, but they want to gear it up so that children are getting a better quality education and are meeting national curriculum standards. So they're setting up a model school in partnership with the government and Papua partners, which is very exciting, but quite a big challenge going forward, looking at curriculum and safeguarding and lots of other issues. But we're very excited because we feel that this is their vision for their next stage of development in rural communities, that kids not just learn to read and write, but also have a really good education, which will give them advantages going forward. Yasumat are also doing the amazing work, and they work a lot with Yapina and us on this, to end violence against women. And especially just the men in the Yasumat organization are stepping right outside their cultural frameworks to challenge violence of men against women in their communities. This is a picture of Yavid, who's now the director, talking about, in this little diagram you can see there, there's a man in the middle, and in the groups that they talk to, they get the men to put down all the cultural expectations of men and the box, the cultural framework that pushes them to behave and act in a certain way. And then they talk about what happens if we step outside that box and act differently, and then help them with tools and skills to think about how they can change some of those behaviors and challenge attitudes in their communities. So it's an incredible work, and they still are doing a lot of the medevac and health work. You can see there the helicopter that they still rely on, especially for the remote schools and supporting medical emergencies. Just a quick example of how this is changing, how this approach is changing people's lives. In the village of Hollowan, where they've been doing some of this work with families on improving family relations between husbands and wives and between men and women, we have recently heard stories of a reduction of family violence. When we did an evaluation recently, women have been given a role in leadership, and for the first time in that area, a woman was elected as a village head, which is unheard of, because everywhere those positions are taken by men. So that's quite exciting. So we can actually really, although it's taken a long time, and sometimes you feel like things might never happen, but we're starting to be able to see really concrete examples of shifts of shifts and transformation, which is really exciting. And my final example, Rode Wanimbo, and this is her with her family, her husband Timmy, and her daughter and son. Rode is a very, very close friend of mine and has been immense, you know, collaboration, the two of us, over the last 2 years, especially since I've moved here. Rode's moved from being a community women's leader to being a church women's leader, and she was previously very nervous about speaking out about the situation of women and the situation of the Papuan people. But over the last 2 years, she has felt more and more compelled to step out of her comfort zone and take risks. And we've worked a lot together. What she's doing now, she is leading women's work. She's been doing trauma healing with refugees, extremely risky work. The last workshop, which we supported, which she ran in a refugee area, there was intelligence agents standing outside the door while they were trying to get the women to talk through trauma and being followed. But she's just so incredibly brave. She also works alongside the West Papua Council of Churches. That's come out of some of the church and community mobilization work, which is the church leaders of four Christian denominations in Papua. And in the last year, we've set up a formal, which is amazing, partnership with the World Council of Churches, who have publicly stated their support for the West Papua Council of Churches and for the plight of the Papuan people, and have now set up a Papua project within the international desk of the World Council of Churches. So Rode has been taking the voices of the women to the United Nations. Over the last year, she's spoken at 5 special sessions of the United Nations, which has now resulted, I think it was in February, a letter of admonition from what they call the special rapporteurs of the UN, which are the specialists, wrote a letter to the Indonesian government insisting that the Red Cross get access to refugees, which now happened last week. So you can see, so the incredible, just the impact of giving people courage and walking alongside. We don't need to be funding big projects. We don't need me or other expats, foreigners on the ground. A lot of it is solidarity, encouragement, being flexible, sometimes giving a little bit of money here and there, and just placing it into God's hands and just believing that he can bring change and working together that can bring incredible transformation. There's a final part of the story and another actor in all of this, which I've mentioned once or twice in how all of this has happened. And that's all of you who've been part of this journey. As I mentioned earlier, all of the people that we work alongside know about Westcott and see you as part of their community of support and solidarity. Whilst you might not be there, every bit of encouragement, prayer, and financial gift has helped make local, national, and international change possible. So no matter who we are and where we are, I really believe we can make a lasting difference. So what's next? What do we want to do? Well, we really want to increase, because we've seen the impact of local to international and being a bridge. We really want to increase the advocacy for international action on West Papua. And we've seen lots of doors opening and opportunities for this. A really interesting example, for those of you also who've been maybe following the Ukraine crisis, which I'm sure all of you are, the World Council of Churches, together with Papua Partners and a few other organizations, have just started a partnership with Bellingcat who tracks, I don't really understand it all, but data and journalistic info and reports on fake news to help us better with our international advocacy and combating fake news, which is becoming more and more prevalent from the government trying to combat the increasing voice of the Papuan people. So we want to do a lot more of that, and just being a bridge for the Papuans to be able to speak out. In July, Rode, who I just mentioned, is going to travel to Geneva to speak at the UN and attend some events, and we're hoping that she will be able to travel here. I'm hoping we'll be able to do something that we can gather people here to meet her and come to Ireland as well and to meet with parliamentarians. But then we also really don't want to lose who we've always been and who our partners are, which is the local community transformation and change on the ground. So that's, we will continue to do that and grow that by supporting community activists, supporting our partners and walking alongside them and gradually building our team on the ground. And finally, it is finally now, I want to leave you with a little bit of a taster about how small voices can affect change and speak to power. These are children. I want to share a little bit about with you the amazing collaboration which happened last year between a group called Fuyakla Children's Choir in West Papua and SOS From the Kids, which is a children's choir in the UK. They were on Britain's Got Talent a few years ago, and they do incredible work in speaking out from a kid's perspective about climate change, what's happening with the environment. And we were really excited to be able to partner with them, and we're continuing that partnership now, to create a song from the two places together. And then the SOS From the Kids were able to perform the song in front of world leaders at the COP meetings in Glasgow, when world leaders gathered to talk about climate change in November. And we just really want to do more of this. It was a real encouragement to the children in the UK. They learned a lot, and it was a fantastic. The children in Papua just were so excited that even though they couldn't be present, their faces were in the room with foreign ministers, trade delegates from all countries around the world. The UK kids were singing live, and West Papua was that surrounded them with noise and words and input into global decisions. So please, if you want to find more, we hope you continue to work, to walk with us. We're going to play the song in a minute, and I will sit down and you can listen and think and pray for everything that's going on. Just to say that if you want to be more involved, please talk to me afterwards. We're still, as always, looking for trustees, volunteers, people who will fundraise for us. It's an exciting journey. You get to meet amazing people and get to be part of an amazing journey and transformational change. Thank you all again, and I'm so pleased I got through it all without. thank you so much.
The sun still sets and rises on a world of green and blue. Woods and oceans, plants and streams. A beauty that is stunning in its wild variety. Open your eyes, open your heart, the natural world is a work of art. A miracle, so finely tuned, something to love, not to consume. The sun still sets and rises on a future we can choose.
Just a few minutes, just to continue to reflect on our response to Naomi. I don't know about you, but I've been blown away by what she said. And I suspect most of us are as well. So I just want to give us just a few minutes just to consider prayerfully our response to Naomi and all that's going on in Papua.